Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, appreciate everybody hanging through the break with us. What's wrong with CJ Stroud? We're going to talk about that in just a second here. I will tell you, and when I say what's wrong with him, like I saw a video from Chris Sims this weekend, which was putting a lot of CJ's issues on the surroundings as opposed CJ himself.
Yeah.
And I think both things can be true. I will tell you, Seth, the one thing that I'm seeing a lot of over the last 48, 72 hours that needs to stop, and it won't because it's Twitter. If anything, I'll get copied on more of these now because I'm requesting they stop. These graphics that get put up with CJ's stats from this season in a column next to, say, Blake Bortles' stats from his second season in the NFL.
Oh,
and they pick out.
I hadn't seen that. Yeah,
Blake Bortles. I've seen a lot of Trevor Lawrence. It's basically cherry picking a bunch of quarterbacks who are generally have been since CJ came into the league. Generally, been viewed as inferior to CJ Stroud. Blake Bortles, obviously inferior to CJ Stroud. I don't even know if Blake Bortles is in the league anymore.
Well, Bortles. The big thing about Bortles was that he amassed a lot of garbage time yardage. It was like a record for yards when playing from behind and all that. Yeah.
In his
Trevor
second
Lawrence,
year.
I'll listen to Trevor Lawrence because I think this has been my issue. I long said, well, look, I'm not interested in making excuses for Trevor Lawrence because of his injuries that he's played through. And yet now I find myself saying, well, maybe CJ's a little banged up. I don't know. He's been playing through something. So I'm a bit of a hypocrite there. But I also think that, like with Blake Bortles, or excuse me, with Trevor Lawrence, also had offensive line issues and protection issues and everything else. So it's really hard to separate some of CJ's play from the poor pass protection, the lack of speed in the wide receiving core now especially, and everything else. The complete and total absence of a run game is really, I think, the most devastating thing, because CJ's still done some really good things. It's just a lot of it's on third and long because they're in third and long all the time because they can't run the football.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, like, specific to Trevor Lawrence, and Trevor Lawrence in his second year got the Jags to the postseason, went on that great run at the end of the year, you know, where they won like 5 out of 6, and he was very good for that stretch. The only thing I would say in like making an injury excuse for CJ is that Trevor Lawrence never touched the level that CJ was last year. Like, Trevor Lawrence has never been mentioned in conversations about top 5 or even barely top 10 quarterbacks, whereas CJ came into this year and a lot of people were expecting a top 5 quarterback performance, and they haven't gotten that. So with CJ and the injuries, I don't view them as much as excuses as reasons. Like, if it were to turn out at the end of the year that he went in for some sort of procedure right after the year was over, I would feel relief that we would maybe now have an explanation for him missing some of the easy throws, or at least easy for him. He made them look easy last year. Like, he, in that Baltimore game, he missed. There was a period in the first half where he missed like 4 passes in a row. Well, no, then he missed 4, like 4 bad incompletions, and the only completion in that stretch was one that maybe should have been intercepted if Dalton Schultz doesn't snare the ball and moss the guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he missed them to everybody. He sailed one to Nico. He sailed a wheel route to Joe Mixon. He missed John Mechie on a pass. Like, it wasn't one of these things where he's throwing it to a guy. Like, if he had missed 3 straight passes to Deontay Johnson, if he were active in that game, I'd have been like, all right, well, they're just not on the same page. You know, these are guys who were wide open, and he's sailing these balls. So, if there were to be something after the year, Seth, that were medical, I would be a lot more relieved about some of the things that I do think are CJ's fault. He's got to make those throws.
The thing that I'm open to injuries being at least part of the explanation, it goes all the way back to his misfire to Tank Dell in the Detroit game, where it's sometimes when a quarterback just doesn't feel right, that's where there's a little bit of hesitancy to pull the trigger on some of the big-time throws. And on that play, it just felt like, man, he waited too long to make the decision, and then he did not, and then he didn't throw a good ball on top of it. The game the other day, the interception that he threw, man, that was going to be a risky throw. And he was out on the run, scrambling. But I feel like he's regressed a little bit, because like on that play, he had time to plant his foot and throw it, but he kind of threw it on the run because there was pressure. But all right, does he now feel that pressure more intensely because he's been hit so many times and because he's banged up because of those hits? It's just, it's not an excuse for the sum total of it all, but it would at least be a reasonable explanation for why there's some things that just aren't right. There's just too many times where, even on the incompletion of Dalton Schultz in the flat, where Dalton was wide open.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Yes, it's a tight pocket. Yes, Laremy Tunsil was getting trucked backwards badly, and CJ was getting hit as he threw it. But I feel like there's a version of CJ that takes a half step to get away from it and then throws it, or steps up in the pocket a little bit to make that throw. And I just don't know if it's either a lack of timing or trust or whatever else it is. Some of these hard throws, he's not making any easier on himself. Yeah. And it's just everything's off. Now, Dalton Schultz didn't get out of the backfield as quickly as he normally would on that, because Laramie's getting trucked backwards and Dalton's checking for the blitz. There's just so many things that are off with the tight ends, with the wide receivers, with the offensive line, that some of it might be injury, but some of it also might be that CJ is just, his clock is screwed up now.
This has been the hardest season in recent memory for me to watch other teams play football, especially other teams that run this system to play football. Like I can watch other games, you know, during seasons like 2021 or 2022 and not get angry, because the Texans are just a bad football team. You know, like it's whatever. It's a rebuild. I know the Texans need a lot more pieces to even be comparable to these other teams that I'm watching play. But, you know, I'm watching Green Bay and Minnesota yesterday, and I'm watching Minnesota just operate with Sam Darnold and with Cam Akers making big plays at the end of that. Cam Akers had a touchdown, and he had the catch that sealed the deal, that basically made it so that Minnesota could just take knees. He was the guy that was in at the end of the game, not Aaron Jones. It was Cam Akers. So there were a few things to get a little upset about in that game. But the main thing, because it's not just that game, it's other games. It's teams that aren't even considered very good NFL offensive teams, but at least they're operating in a way that doesn't make everything look hard. Everything looks hard. With even the plays that they convert, you know, even the third and 15s that they convert, it's usually something of CJ. There's usually some element of CJ having to navigate some massive difficulty in order to do it and put a cape on in order to convert those plays. That's what's so infuriating to watch. Is it's now the Texans are a relevant team. They're a playoff team. We've seen good offense at times, mostly last season with this team. How is it that these other teams that are very average offensively at least make at least on first and 10, they hand it off and like, wow, there's an easy 7-yard run. That never happens with the Houston Texans.
Honestly, the Cam Akers scenario and the fact that they traded him away is still so puzzling to me. I mean, you look at him versus Damian Pierce. It's not like Cam Akers is having an all-pro season or anything. And he's only averaging 3.9 yards per attempt, but he's got 98 rushing attempts to Damian Pierce's 21.
I'll sum it up. So you can put him on. You can put him on the field.
Yeah.
You can't put Damian Pierce on the field. You know why I know that? They're not putting Damian Pierce on the field.
Well, that's. I mean, Cam Akers has 12 receptions to Damian's 2.
Right.
Cam Akers, at the very least, provides you some kind of dual threat at the running back position. And maybe. You know, with the Texans, he's going to have to manufacture a lot of that yardage, but I feel like he's at least capable of it. Compared to the two-headed monster they have for backup running back of Ogunbowale and Damian Pierce, it's not a great backup running back situation.
No.
But the whole run game in total, and this is where, you know, the whole thing with Bobby Slowick was, we said all offseason, all right, it's very promising. He still has to prove that he can engineer a good rushing attack. I'm like, okay, good would be awesome. A good rushing attack would be incredible. God. But we know that it's not.
Average would be good.
Games in which Joe Mixon has over 100 rushing yards, we're still saying, like, man, they did not run the ball well.
Right.
Because it's Joe Mixon has a couple big runs, but, man, they're not churning out yardage. And it's putting the offense in third and long, second and long way too often. That's one of the things that I know individually the offensive linemen are not playing well, obviously. But there's plenty of teams that run the ball better than the Texans who have journeyman offensive line across the board, or at least one or two really good linemen, but not other guys to write home about. There's a disjointedness that it's impossible for me not to look at the whole operation and say, at the end of the day, Bobby Slowick's not getting enough out of these guys.
Yeah.
I don't care. As angry as I get at individual offensive linemen, to be as bad as they are in the run game and to be as bad at they are at some of the simple things in the passing game, when you couple that with the tight ends and the wide receivers and everything else, is there a position group on the offense right now that you feel good about? Even before Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell got injured, you still didn't feel great about the wide receiving group other than Nico Collins.
Right. Well, you and I led into this. I would have said quarterback, but the lead into this segment was what's wrong with CJ right now?
Right. Yeah, I don't.
And just to be very clear, so it doesn't get misconstrued or twisted, I still feel great about CJ Stroud as the future quarterback of this football team.
Yeah.
There's a big element, and I was feeling it during that Ravens game, and I was seeing it during the Ravens game on social media and just talking to people. I think there's a big element for people right now that feels like, A, this offense ain't getting fixed this year, and B, everybody just needs a big reset, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Look, I just, and this is where, when you talk about, there's just so many things off that you can make an excuse for somebody. You can make an excuse for somebody on the team almost every single down. And I'll criticize Bobby sometimes for not attacking the middle of the field enough. But then you get into that game on Wednesday, and there's times where, yeah, they're supposed to be quick hitters over the middle and mesh concepts and stuff. But even versus a four-man rush, where CJ's taking the ball in the gun, taking two steps backwards, and he's getting hit at the top of his drop when he's trying. Like, the defensive linemen are coming free so quickly and ferociously up the middle at times that you can't even throw over the middle. It's just so frustrating. Yeah. When I'm watching on TV, I wanted to blame CJ for not getting rid of the ball quickly enough. But then I'm watching the game, and, well, okay, yeah, he could. He's got Xavier Hutchinson open on a target, but Kyle Van Noy is on CJ as he would be starting his motion. And it's just, you can't function that way.
Right.
You just can't function that way.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Like, what, on the offensive side of the football, what group do you feel good about right now? I probably, when healthy, even when they weren't moving the football all that great with Tank and Stephon Diggs both still healthy, I felt good about that room. You know, like, those are three good receivers.
Well,
now it's Nico and a bunch of dudes, you know. And
the thing about when they had the three guys out there, or just even two of them, they were still affecting the offense, even though the passing game, or affecting the defense, where the passing game wasn't what you wanted to be. But, man, they're facing cover two all the time, and you should be able to run the ball versus that. You should be able to complete short stuff, but they couldn't even do that because of the ineptitude of the blocking. And by the blocking, I'll say by the offensive line, the tight ends, the running backs, all of it. And then you add on to that, you know, Joe Mixon, I could make some of the same excuses for Joe Mixon that I make for CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe Mixon's always doing a great job of making the right read. But then you're like, my knee-jerk reaction is, but yeah, he's hardly ever getting good looks in front of him. And I think he and CJ both at times are pressing too hard to try to get the big shots. And it's just a quagmire.
I don't feel great about any room on that side of the football. And yet I feel like if they fix the offensive line room, that has an effect on all the others.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a cut. There's a cut out there that I think a lot of, if you're a football fan and you're on social media, you've probably seen. I think it's from the draft, or it was after Jim Harbaugh was named the head coach of the the Chargers.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was at the draft or the combine when all the coaches do availabilities at the press conference, or they sit down for breakfast with the reporters there in the room. And Harbaugh has a great cut, and this is he kind of tipped his hand as to what they were going to do in the draft, because they end up drafting Joe Alt, the tackle from Notre Dame, to go with Rashawn Slater as their other tackle. So they got their bookend tackles for the next several years. And he said that basically, and I'm totally paraphrasing here, but offensive line is the one position that everybody else is dependent upon. You know, the other positions, they're not dependent on you. I mean, there is some interdependency with each position, but none more so than that group. And that is why we're going to build through the offensive line. And I think in terms of intentionality, I think the Texans have made an effort to do that in the last couple years. It's just they're either being coached by the wrong guys, or they are the wrong guys.
Because
it ain't getting done with this group right now.
I think the frustrating thing is that, you know, I'll say that, hey, you don't have to have all pros across the board. It's good enough to have a couple of studs and a few journeymen. But in this scheme, the frustrating thing is that usually you actually do get some really good performances out of average offensive linemen if they're good for the scheme and if it's being coached right. That's where I think in the offseason, if they don't make a change at offensive coordinator, I'll be astounded if they don't make a change at offensive line coach.
Agreed.
And it's almost, I mean, this comes back to D'Amico's hiring. Chris Strausser never coached in a system like this. You talk to offensive linemen, this goes back to when I was playing against this scheme or talking to Gary Kubiak about it. It's way more complicated than just what you draw up on the board. Somebody once told me that it was, you know, you can learn the playbook in a half hour. It'll take you decades to really learn how to block all of it.
Yes.
And there's a lot of technique involved. There's a lot of mental work involved. And when you have an offensive line coach who's never coached in a system like this before, it's hard to pick up on the fly and expect that he's all of a sudden going to be an Alex Gibbs senior. It's not that simple or easy.
Anybody who's ever been in management at any level, not just in football, but in business, knows hiring is a skill that you get better at over time. You get better at hiring people over time. It's normal, I think, for first-time head coaches. It's normal for them to have a list of guys they would want to go coach with. You know, D'Amico's probably been putting his list together during his time in San Francisco through the years.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if he hadn't been. Like, if any of these coaches, college or pro, don't have a list of guys, like, boy, when I get my head coaching job, these are my first 10 phone calls I'm making because I want this guy. We've talked about it at all the clinics we've been to. Someday we're going to coach together. Bobby and D'Amico probably talked about it in those rooms when they were quality control guys. Like, someday. Doesn't mean they're the right guys. You know, like, you get better at hiring over time, and I think that's got to be the hope if you're a Texan fan, is that the same way you hope that CJ improves at this, or Nico improves at that, or Will Anderson Jr. gets better at the top of his edge rush, you hope that D'Amico Ryans gets better at identifying coaching talent and what fits what he wants to do here.
The other thing that happens with coaching is that the problem is people have contracts. And a lot of times your dream list of offensive line coaches, the top five guys on there, there's a good chance they're all under contract, you know? Hey, Jeff Stoutland, the Eagles offensive line coach, probably not getting fired anytime soon. You know, it's just like he's not there. The one thing that's curious to me about the Texans' run game is that I don't believe they have a run game coordinator specifically. And, I don't know what's going to happen with Kyle Shanahan, but Chris Forrester is the offensive line coach and run game coordinator for the 49ers.
Mm.
He's been around forever. And that's a guy where hopefully he's on D'Amico's list.
Yeah.
That, all right, guys that could become available this offseason, that if you got a chance, just money whip that dude. Get a guy in here who actually knows what he's doing. If you're not going to make a change at coordinator.
Agreed.